Next item on the agenda is Deborah J. Suski et al., number 17-1275. You draw the short straw today, Jay?
I've been putting things off, and you know what they say, sooner or later.
Somebody leave the purse.
All right, this is a little bit different. Same general area. Deborah Suski et al., her two sisters, are requesting authorization to construct an 80-foot-long nearshore quarry stone breakwater with associated clean sand beach nourishment and vegetated plantings at the mouth of Tabbs Creek in the Dungeon Thicket subdivision in Lancaster County. The project is protested by the adjacent property owners and several, which should be multiple, nearby residents within Tabbs Creek. These are 23 additional emails that came in yesterday, this morning, last night, in addition to what you already have in your packet. Essentially, those are mimicking or mirroring the concerns of the others having to do with navigation in and out of Tabbs Creek and the dredge channel there, too. We've come across the Rappahannock River from Deltaville out and around Windmill Point, and this is Tabbs Creek, and the Dungeon Thicket subdivision is this landmass here.
Where's Whitestone from there?
Whitestone's right here.
Oh, so, okay,
yeah,
thank
come
you.
Come across the bridge.
Yep.
Yep. The project site is about 4 miles northwest of Windmill Point, 2.5 from the town of Whitestone. Thank you. The fetch to the southeast, to east, to northeast is over 20 miles. I didn't bring it in this slide,
sure.
But the only thing stopping the wind out of the northeast is Tangier, and it doesn't stop much wind, so it's very exposed shoreline. This particular location, they've lost more than 500 feet of shoreline, at least from the information we've gotten from VIMS, looking at the historical, some historical charts and maps showing quite a lot of land erosion at this location. The Sandy Point specifically has retreated an average of more than 6 feet per year from 1857 to 1937, according to VIMS. The project, there are a series of low-profile groins that you see along the east-facing shoreline in Dungeon Thicket leading up to the mouth of Tabbs Creek. Again, you can see the dredge channel here. You can even kind of pick up one of the channel markers in this drawing. The project location is right at the point, right at the very end of the point. In this drawing, Chesapeake Trail actually turns into what's called the Trail of Silent Sand, which leads to Silent Sand Beach, which is the subject property. The Suskies acquired the two parcels, which is the trail right-of-way leading to the beach and the beach itself, in 2017. The beach area at that time was 0.238 acres, not much property. The second parcel is the trail, which is a 20-foot-wide road leading to the beach. They had originally proposed two low-profile stone groins perpendicular to the shoreline coming out to the northwest to trap and to trip up and hold sand, much like the groins along here have done. That project was protested. That proposal was protested pretty heavily. They came back with the current design, which is the breakwater, nearshore breakwater, and sand nourishment. The breakwater itself will be located. Thank you. Anticipated that. I didn't annotate this particular drawing. I do later in my slides, so it's a little bit clearer. But essentially, this is the existing mean low water line on the point, the broad line. And then the mean high water line is back right up against an existing revetment. So the Susky parcel is really just this beach area as well as this upland path, right-of-way trail leading to it. The breakwater will be apex to apex 40 feet, a total of 86 out to out. With the sand being brought in behind it, that's what this polygon represents with the hash marks. Would be clean sand brought in to supplement the existing beach, and then the upper area of the beach to be planted with vegetation to hold the beach. Standard living shoreline design, if you will. Again, you can see the limits of the marked channel. Red 7, red 5, red 3. Or is that green? I guess it would be green, wouldn't it? Red, right, returning green. Anyway, the limits of the channel are here, a couple hundred feet north of the proposal. In profile, I did add the mean low water in darker blue and the mean high water in lighter blue to give you an idea of the height of this structure, proposed structure, and the distance of the structure, channelward of the current high water line and low water line. Again, from mean low water, a maximum of 26 feet channelward, which is the board's jurisdiction, and from the high water line out, a maximum of 44 feet out from the existing beach. I'm kind of skipping around. The original request, you can see a light hash mark polygon here. That was one of the groins proposed initially. The other here, that was withdrawn. At the time it was submitted, the groins would have required a permit from the local wetlands board as well as VMRC. Once they eliminated the groins, the only structure that's going in is channelward of the low water line on state bottom. The sand going in on the intertidal beach is within the jurisdiction of the wetlands board, but beach replenishment activities are exempt under the Beaches and Dunes Ordinance that Lancaster County has adopted. So the physical placing of the sand and the planting of that sand in the intertidal zone doesn't require a wetland permit. So there was no local wetland permit required, no local hearing. So again, the structure, existing revetment you'll see in some of the photos coming up. This is the 1955 survey that accompanied some of the application that came in, kind of oriented facing north, so the lettering's a little skewed, but this is the trail of silent sand that is part of the Susky parcel, and they also acquired a portion of this silent sand beach. In 1955, that's how much beach was present. Their more recent survey in 95, that spit is now gone, and the only parcel that remains is this parcel A, which is the Susky parcel. And again, you can have the note referencing back to that 1955 survey. So it's a very dynamic area. The spit is going away. And this is just, again, oriented differently, but Chesapeake Trail ends. Trail of Silent Sand is the 20-foot right-of-way, which will be the access for construction of the breakwater, which would be out here. First application generated lots of opposition. The second, the modification generated lots of opposition. There's lots of folks here today. You have the majority of that in your packet. Again, you have some additional stuff that came in yesterday. A lot of the folks that live in Tabbs Creek, the Tabbs Creek Civic Association, formed a dredging committee that has dredged the channel multiple times in the past, and that is their responsibility. They collect money from other members of the association to maintain the channel. The majority of the opposition has to do with concerns that the structure, and this is the center point of the breakwater, where it would be offshore, that that breakwater will cause the channel to fill faster than it is naturally. So this is, gives you some ideas. I believe this is one corner of the Silent Sand Trail, so they're all standing on the Suski property. Looking back the other direction, again, the center point of the breakwater, this is a little bit lower tide, but at a full low tide, there is intertidal beach that is the property of the Suskies. And again, that's green marker 3, I believe. Different day. I measured from the drawings submitted and from the aerial photographs, and it's about 230 feet of shoal to get to the marker, which is just channelward of the edge of the shoal, fortunately. They've had to move the markers in the past as the channel has migrated a little bit. Different day, a little bit lower tide. Again, looking in that same direction. I don't think you can pick it up, but it's right there, the breakwater, proposed breakwater. Looking back the other direction, this is a terminal groin or jetty, if you will, that's been trapping some sand moving up the beach. Now I'm standing on the Giesler parcel, their pier. Sand has been coming around the point and depositing on the backside, and the quiescent water on the backside has actually filled in the Giesler's boat slip. They've extended their pier once. You can see the different color here. They've extended the pier. They've applied, I don't recall, they've talked to me about needing to get the sand out of there so they can then use their boathouse. But it just gives you an idea of the sand that's migrating in from the bay around the point and into Tabs Creek proper. For comparison, 2013, showing the area, boathouse is somewhat usable. Most recent, 2017, I believe, it's completely sanded in. So the sand is coming in and wrapping around and filling. So there's a lot of sand moving in the system. On the site visit we had, where you saw the folks there in the picture, both Scott Hardaway and Emily Heim from VIMS came up to talk with folks. This is part of the VIMS report that's in your packet. The packet is all in black and white, and it's really difficult to see, so I took the liberty of basically cutting and pasting the images provided by VIMS that give an idea of the area. Again, 1957 chart with the 1937 shoreline depicted in red. So this again mimics that long silent sand beach spit.
Is that 1957 or 1857?
Sorry, did I say 1857 yeah. Chart, thank you, with a 1937 shoreline overlaid. And it was called Taps Creek back then. That's what was new to me, Tabs Creek. So at that particular time, the channel was way to the north side, was to the other side, opposite side of Tabs Creek mouth. And I'm going to go through these relatively quickly. I'm not going to be doing it justice, but the VIMS folks are here if additional clarification is required.
It will be.
This is aerial from 1937, which was that last red line image. Now that's transposed onto an actual aerial photograph, not onto a chart. And you can see the sand bars in the offshore area that's, you know, with an easter, northeaster, southeaster. Anything out of that quadrant is pushing sand into Tabs Creek. 1959, with the shoreline in blue. And again, in red was the 1937. So, for instance, you can see the retreat of the shoreline here and in other areas around. And again, you've actually gained shoreline from 1937 to 57 as that spit migrates to the north. Now the spit is essentially gone in 1994, 69 shoreline in green. 2017. Again, for reference, the Giesler boathouse that's been sanded in. That's the jetty, and then the terminal groins along here with a 2013 shoreline on a 2017 aerial. So working from the current aerial photographs that we have, I went ahead and measured the point of the center line of the breakwater to the existing green number 5, I believe, and it's 230 feet thereabouts. So there's a wide, wide shoal channelward to the north from the breakwater before the shore, before the creek drops off. This is the image you saw earlier that I attempted to add the mean low, the current mean low water shoreline. Again, showing the structure channelward of mean low. And this polygon represents the beach sand that will be brought in to nourish and expand this beach area, with the understanding that it's going to be planted on the upper reaches to hold the sand that's put there. And if you bear with me one second, Scott from VIMS brought in one more slide that he asked. I didn't add it to the actual PowerPoint. But this is a slide that he prepared, adding the proposed breakwater, adding the proposed sand, and kind of highlighting the existing groin structure. And I'll just leave that up there. I'll get back to my script here. Thank you, Jamie. So the Gieslers, Mildred and Tom Giesler, own parcels on both sides of the Silent Sand Trail. They own a parcel here with their pier and a parcel here. I believe that's the Giesler house. I may be wrong. I apologize if I am. So the Gieslers, as adjacent property owners, objected. Multiple other property owners within Dungeon Thicket objected. But the majority of the concern seems to be the folks in Taps Creek who maintain this channel through the Taps Creek Civic Association. And they are of a mind that this structure will cause the sand to move more into the channel than would otherwise happen through natural processes. The TCCA has 85 members who reside on Tabs Creek. They've maintained the dredge channel four times to date, with the most recent dredging being done in 2014. I was part of that review since the very beginning. As I mentioned, they feel that any structure will cause the sand to be then pushed into the channel. The other protestants that are within Dungeon Thicket are primarily concerned that this will create an attractive nuisance. Other folks will go out onto this private beach, do what people do on a beach. They believe the 20-foot wide easement, which is outside this agency's jurisdiction, will result in trespass over that upland property, and that some trees may have to be cut down within that easement to get the equipment out to build this structure. As I mentioned, the VIMS site visit, the joint site visit with a lot of us here, happened on March 1st, 2018. Those are the photographs you saw. The VIMS report is part of the record, and you've seen some of those photographs that I just presented. No other state agencies have commented on the proposal. Again, as I mentioned, Lancaster County doesn't have any jurisdiction in this case. Public hearing in the county was therefore not required, no permit required. So in summary, staff has been involved with the Civic Association since its inception in 97 and is aware of the dynamic nature of this particular area of the county. We understand the concern raised by the association, but we do not believe this relatively small encroachment into the waterway will have any perceptible impacts to the channel that is located over 200 feet away, given the large volume of sand present in the nearby bars and shoals at the mouth of the creek. In fact, if the breakwater functions as designed, it will likely trap sand that's coming up the shoreline around the point and into Tabs Creek, making this beach area bigger and reducing the amount of sand that's bypassing and coming around now. And you see that function here with the jetties, or groins actually. The sand seems to be predominantly moving in a northerly direction and around into the point. VIMS has provided a very thorough analysis and comprehensive history of the area and indicate the proposal will likely not exacerbate the ongoing shoreline processes that have shaped the area over time. With regard to concerns over trespass in the area, that issue is outside the purview and authority of the commission, but staff would encourage the applicants to address this matter through whatever appropriate legal channels to keep people from trespassing. Accordingly, after evaluating the merits of the project and considering all the factors in 28.2.12.05, staff finds the proposal to be a reasonable and permissible use of submerged lands. Therefore, we recommend approval of the project as proposed, with a royalty in the amount of $30 for the placement of the beach nourishment channelward of mean low water only, which is going to be over 600 square feet of state-owned bottom at the standard rate of a nickel a square foot. We don't charge for rock, either riprap, groins, breakwaters, as we believe while it is an encroachment over state bottom, it does provide habitat and doesn't really result in a otherwise fill and a creation of upland. So there is no royalty associated with the breakwater, just the beach nourishment channel would mean low water. That's all I have. I would be happy to try to answer any questions.
Any questions, Mr. Woodard, by members of staff? Mr. Tankard?
So, Mr. Woodard, your belief is that this sand's migrating north.
I believe that the sand to the to the south is migrating north.
Yes.
I believe the sand to the north is migrating south. I believe the sand to the east is migrating west. And, yeah, but along this particular point, the net drift appears to be south to north.
Mr. Ballard.
So in your opinion, what's the benefit of this structure? Is it to stop erosion of the land? It looked to me like there was a revetment in some of the pictures for that purpose. What's the need of the structure?
I'm going to go back to my PowerPoint just because there's actually more photos. The purpose is to protect the parcel that the Siskis bought, the beach that they bought for their private recreational enjoyment.
So it's for sand accretion.
Yes, to.
Yeah, and maybe it's a question for the applicant. It just looked to me like there was plenty of sand, and that wasn't an issue.
This is not at a dead low tide. It gets a little bit lower and at low water. There, in fact, is real estate, sand, channelward of the revetment, that the Siskis would like to protect and, in this case, supplement and hold the beach that they've purchased.
Mr. Zedrin?
What type of scientific evidence do the protesters have that what they say is going to happen?
I will let them speak for themselves. I know Mr. Glover, among others, had a series of aerial photographs similar to what you saw with VIMS that show over time what's been going on, but I will let them present their case.
Okay.
Further questions? Thank you. Who's from VIMS that would like to answer some questions on this matter, if you would? I've got a couple questions.
Scott Hardaway of our Shoreline Studies Program has been with us for well over 35 years. Uh-huh. He did the assessment of the latest version and authored the report, so if I could get Scott.
Absolutely. Yep. Mr. Zedrin, this might be a chance for you to ask some questions from a scientific perspective as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Hardaway, good to see you again, sir.
Mr. Bowman, good to see you.
You have been sworn. You prepared the report.
Yes,
Well, I have one question right off. Do you think this is a – do you agree with staff recommendations?
I do. Yes.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about the dynamics here, what you think is going to – because obviously it is very dynamic. Don't have to be doing redundant with the word,
yeah.
But
– Jay, you can get my slide up. So we went back in time. You have the report, and I think it's fairly telling the dynamic history of this. I mean, the spit started to grow across that in 1937. It was all the way across it. In 1969, the Corps of Engineers, if I understand, came in and cut a channel through that spit. I don't have the slides, but if we look at your your figures on figure, figure 7, you'll see there's a 1969 aerial imagery, and you'll see there's a cut through the neck of the spit. And I do believe that what they were trying to do was reestablish that channel edge that was there back in 1857. And since then, that end of that spit has migrated all north and away. And the Taft Creek Civic Association is trying to maintain a channel through that neck, which makes sense to me, as that's where you want to cut it. You wouldn't want to try to reestablish that channel down where the spit was. So that's what they've been doing. And the dynamics are that this is anything coming out of the easterly quadrant, wind wave climate is coming through here. We see evidence that you have sediment transport from the north at times, bringing sand north into the channel, as well as south. That might actually be the net direction. There's active movement across the shoals themselves. The shoals over time have been fairly stable, and they are a function of the antecedent geology. And so the sand moving, the shoals are fairly stable, but the sand moving across them is not. And so it just seems that this proposal, the sand would continue to come along the side of the groin, and when it hits this guy here, it's going to scoot around the outside, and it'll reduce some of the sand coming into the creek on that end, and it may on the corner. May come around and move in that direction. I don't see the dynamic where it would go into the dredge channel that you're currently trying to maintain.
Just so I'm clear, because that's the question that I was going to ask, in your professional opinion, do you believe that this project would in any way exacerbate the problem with the filling of the dredge channel? Questions, Mr. Ballard?
Two questions. Can you talk a little bit about the alignment of the breakwater? It seems to me the fetch is coming more from the northeast,
right,
that they're trying to protect, and this breakwater is facing what I believe to be more northwest.
Right.
And my second question is that alignment and the position of the breakwater. Do you foresee accretion of sand in, I believe, the neighboring property that had the boathouse that was sanded up?
To answer the second one, I think it might actually reduce that to some degree.
Okay.
As far as the orientation, this was the design that was provided by the consultant. And in reality, it acts in some ways like a spur. We've done a lot of spurs off of groin, as you've seen them. This is kind of a long spur, but the effect would basically be the same. I think you'll see sand accrete on the northeast end of it, and it'll work its way around. It's a bump in the shoreline, and it'll also maintain that beach to a large degree too. I think that's the main point for the proposed structure.
Further questions? I have one other, Mr. Hardaway. How long have you been doing this work?
39 years in July.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Anyone else in support of this project? Anyone in opposition to the project wishes to be heard? Support of the project still? Support. Still we're on support. Yes, sir. Come forward. Raise your right hand. Solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give. Be the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
State your name for the record, please.
My name is Craig Palabinski with Bayshore Design. I'm the agent representing this project.
Okay.
I just have a few points I'll briefly go over with you. This property, the applicant's property, is also known as Silent Sand Beach. It is for community beach access, which serves the entire trails and subdivision. Silent Sand Beach was created as part of the original development in 1955. It serves a total of 78 lots, 28 waterfront lots and 50 non-waterfront lots, for a total of 18 property owners. Suskias have bought the property, and it is eroding severely, as you can see from the aerial photographs and the presentation given by VIMS and VMRC staff. And what we're proposing to do is construct 80 linear foot breakwater situated here with a 14 foot base width. The maximum encroachment is 26 feet channelward, the mean low water mark. Landward of the breakwater, we're going to bring in 110 cubic yards of high quality beach sand and plant the upper beach zone with Spartina patents, a total of 1,600 square feet. You have an existing rock structure along the back shore that was installed by the adjacent property under the revetment back in the late 1980s, early 1990s. A good portion of this revetment is installed on the community property now owned by the Suskies. This proposed breakwater is designed to stabilize the beach by creating a wave break to the long northeast-east fetch. The beach nourishment area with the beach and vegetation plantings will stabilize the beach. It is also expected that the nearshore sand movement from east to west will feed the breakwater by trapping some of the nearshore sand flow, which will also help reduce the amount of sand flow coming around the creek and shoaling in of the geese here. Just in closing, this proposed shoreline stabilization is the preferred method of stabilization for this situation. The VIM Center for Coastal Resources Management, CCRM, decision tree recommends the offshore breakwater beach nourishment for this particular situation. That's all I have at this time, but I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for the agent? Thank you, Mr. Poblinski.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to be heard in support? Yes, ma'am. Raise your right hand. Solemnly swear the testimony you give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, except to God.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, ma'am. Proceed.
As Craig mentioned, my two sisters and I bought the beach, but it is not a private beach. It is a community beach. Everybody in Trails End has deeded access to the beach. What happened is the beach came up for sale. A group of us homeowners, a total of 11, got together, talked about buying the beach, what we could do to save what little beach there was left to keep it a community beach. I'll admit, after 28 years in the military, I have a tendency to act. I went ahead and bought the beach, but I have been including the other households in the discussion about what to do with the beach. They've been involved, and there are, like I said, a total of at least 11 households who are for bringing back the community beach.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Make one more clarification. We don't own the trail, the Silent Sand. That is a road. It's just like Chesapeake Trail's a road. Everybody in the community owns that road to the beach.
Thank you, ma'am. Questions of the owner? Thank you, ma'am. Anyone else in support of the project? Yes, ma'am. How are you? Raise your right hand. Solemnly swear the testimony you give be the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God. State your name for the record, please, ma'am.
Yes, my name is Sandy Jones.
Yes, ma'am.
And my husband and I, Stuart Harris, bought this place on Tomahawk Trail in 2013. And we really bought it because we had access to the Silent Sand Beach. And we thought it would be a great way to have our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
There you go.
There you go. Go down and enjoy this beach because we don't have beachfront property. When we actually bought the play, then within that deed, by the way, that we have access to the beach. Right there, I'm glad you kind of left that up. Right there. Oh, I don't know how to do that.
All you got to do is move it.
Oh, okay.
There you go. It won't bite.
The original line, I think, was right here. But and that was in 1955. But it was when the tree surveyed, so I think it was moved back to this. But anyway, it is what it is right now. But that is beach that we kind of, I just hope that we can get the rights and we can enjoy the beach that we felt we
did. In your support of the project. Thank you, ma'am. Any questions? Thank you. Anyone else in support of this project? Yes, sir. Come forward. There you go. State, raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you give be the truth, whole truth, and none but the truth, help you God?
Yes, sir.
State your name for the record, please.
Stuart Harris.
Proceeds, please, sir.
I've been coming to this area since 1947. My family's owned land there since then. In the north side of the channel there, just out from the mouth of the channel, I had a home there. There was 7 homes there then. My brother lives there now. My 2 cousins live there, and son-in-law live there. So 4 of the 7 places were family. So I've logged many hours and many miles walking that beach on the north side. And through that time, I've witnessed the south side of the beach, which we're talking about, the south side of the creek. Numerous times, people over there since the channel was moved, people fishing, kids playing in the water. Like my wife said, we bought it for the sake of family, daughters, children, grandchildren, great children, that whole family. And it appears to me that since the channel was moved, there was on the south side, there was quite a bit of sand and it has eroded away. On the north side, just outside northeast of the channel there, where my brother is, some years ago, before the channel was moved, I could bring my boat up to the pier that was there. Outboard, inboard, outboard with a unit down, I could drive up to the pier there with plenty of water for my 21-foot wooden boat. Now, since the channel was moved, that northeast side of the channel, and regular low tide now, you maybe have 6 inches of water.
Mm-hmm.
So my thought is that the sand has moved from the south mouth of the creek to the northeast side of the creek and filled in on that side of the creek. It's like I say, there was a lot of sand on the south side at the mouth of the creek years ago, and I support the idea of breakwater jetties or whatever that can catch that sand, some of that sand, and build back up the beach for my family and fun.
All right, thank you, sir. Any questions? Thank you, sir. Anyone else in support of this project? Anyone in opposition to the project? All right, I see 2 hands. Yes, sir. 3, ma'am, you can come first. Sir, you can come forward. Sir, you can come up forward. Have a seat. Be ready. If you'd like. Yes, sir, I got you. Yes, ma'am. Raise your right hand. Everyone's going to testify in opposition. Please raise your right hand. Nobody went from 3 to 10. You solemnly swear a testimony that you give be the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God. And please state your name for the record.
My name is Margie Redlin. I am a resident of Taps Creek, and I also belong to the Civic Association. I wanted my feathers, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. We purchased our home back in 1995,
mm-hmm.
and this is the view I have known This is right coming out into the bay. This mm-hmm. is the view I have known and loved. It's a very fragile and pristine area. I believe Ms. Suskey plans to put a man-made physical barrier there. I think it will be an eyesore to what I know and love. We all have memories, and this is what it is right now. I'm going to read because I'm getting very emotional. So a man-made structure in this pristine, fragile area would be an insult to nature and to everyone who calls Tabs Creek home. This is the view I have known for 23 years. The proposed breakwater would run 80 feet long, parallel to this shore, right to the right of this. It would be, to me, in my opinion, an ugly and industrial-looking site that would change this view forever. The beautiful shoal is very accessible and provides a beach-like place at low tide. You can access this area. I have seen people sitting there in lawn chairs, people fishing from this point. It provides everything a beach would without destroying the natural beauty. On the last page of this is a letter from Ms. Suskey in which she states that she and her sisters, when they bought the property in 2003, the homes they live in, their waterfront homes, they have walked down to this and enjoyed, I am quoting, "We have walked down here and enjoyed watching the boats." She has been utilizing it. Later, she states that when she bought the parcel, she didn't know it was such a small amount of land. But she had just bought that in 2017. So, point made. Creation of a man-made beach will invite undesirable nuisances such as boat traffic, exhaust fumes, litter, noise, confusion, drinking, boating, urination, defecation on our beaches and in our waters, wandering pets, campfires, at no risk to Ms. Guskey's property, which is houses away, and she can't even see this area. Submerged aquatic grasses that help provide oxygen and food to aquatic life will be destroyed to make a beach. So you can argue that point. This is an estuary, not a beach. Trees, she proposes removing trees on this property and putting in her plantings, which could then obstruct views of people who live over on this side of the cove. This, I don't know if it's going to be a private beach or a public beach. I don't understand that. But there's no way to police who comes on that beach. My case in point is there is a beach across Fleets Bay. It's private land. I was just there this weekend with my granddaughter. I didn't intend to pick up litter, but I picked up broken beer bottles. I saw dog poop. People don't care if they don't own it. They don't care. This is an ugly, ugly reality of people and beaches. We have stewards and we have abusers. Some just don't care. On June 2nd, Commissioner Bowman, you helped with the Clean Bay Day in Smithfield. You know what you picked up. You know what you saw. I would imagine it was all left by humans trafficking the area. There is no justifiable reason that I can see for creating a beach adjacent to this fragile channel and destroy the natural beauty we call home. This is a very accessible shoal. Ms. Suskey is desiring to have a beach here. I don't know if she realizes the consequences that she has to the homes beyond this point who use this channel every day and see this as our opening. I believe that all she plans to do, she does want to have access to water, and I believe that since she owns waterfront that they can possibly make it there and allow their neighbors to use it on their properties that they have. I'll just recap this shortly. She will not see any of this. What I say are eyesores when she visits her man-made beach. This breakwater is not intended to save structures from falling in waters. It's only created to satisfy her desire to extend a beach that didn't exist when she bought it. If a man-made beach is built to attract more boats to this already fragile channels, creating a beach will destroy submerged grasses that aquatic life use for nourishment. Boat and litter will come in. Props from engines will most likely come in from this side to access the beach. Because once again, you cannot police who will use the beach. VMI says that their main challenge, I got this from a YouTube video because it's really hard to find mission statements on your website. that one of their videos say that human impact is one of the greatest challenges to our waters. I will also say that on your website, Commissioner, your statement was, we serve as stewards of the Commonwealth's marine and aquatic resources and protectors of its tidal waters, homelands for present and future generations. So, you know, we're making memories, and I can't get to the next slide, but it is my granddaughter. We were here. She visited last week. These are the generations that we're teaching about being stewards of environment. And I guess that's it. If anyone has any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Any questions? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Who's next? You can take the picture down now, sir. You raise your right hands. Oh, you all have been sworn. State your name for the record, please.
My name is Charles Springett. I'm a resident of Dabbs Creek and member of the Dabbs Creek Civic Association, and I'm also responsible for the dredging, and that's what I really want to speak to this morning. As you know, we are objecting to this proposal, and I guess our first objection to this is that we don't think we've been given enough time to air our objections and discuss them with VIMS. We've got the VIMS report, and I would like to talk about that in a minute. But we asked for that, and that was denied. We thought the hearing would not be held until August, and there would be plenty of time to talk to VIMS about what our concerns are. The quote there is from the information we got from Jay about the meeting. The purpose is to arrive at a clear understanding of all the facts relating to the case before making a decision, and I don't think we're doing that. I really don't. I think there are some real issues with the VIMS report that need to be more aired. Anyway, this has not happened. I don't understand why we're rushing. But anyway, let me say to start with that we have enormous respect for VIMS. I think it's a terrific organization. I think we are very lucky here on the Bay to have them. But and I've read their report, and I have read the staff recommendation, and they don't see any problem with this application, and we wish we could agree, but we do. We are not arguing with any of the science behind these recommendations, and in fact, what our position has been somewhat mischaracterized in the lead-up to this. We are not saying that we think this project will impact the creek. What we're saying is that we think that there is a probability that it will. There is a risk that it will. And that I'd like to get into the risk-benefit element of this later on, but we think any time you put a structure like that close to a channel, and I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about sand movement in the area, I don't think we really know for sure what happens. And if there's a risk that sand is going to increase the flow of sand into the channel, and we understand sand is flowing into the channel, we're set up to deal with that, and we do deal with that. But if there is a risk that flow increases, and it doesn't have to be a very big risk, then that's a risk that we're going to have to deal with, and it's going to cost us money. We're going to have to dredge more often. Now, that's not just a financial risk. We do everything we can to keep the dredging to a minimum, because dredging is disruptive. It's not good for the environment. I mean, the VIMS has, not VIMS, VMRC has very strong rules about what you can do and what you can't do, and we try very hard to abide by those rules. Now, Jay referred to the meeting at the beach, and when we were discussing that, Bob Hardaway was asked, having said that he thought there would be no influence on the channel, his response was, of course I can't get me. He was asked if he could guarantee that there would be no impact on the channel, and he said, of course I can't. And he's right. Of course he can't. I think had we asked him that would there be an impact on the entrance of the Wicomico River from this structure in Tabbs Creek, I think the answer would be, of course there would be no impact on the Wicomico River. And I think that's sort of the point, is it's not likely that it's going to be a big impact. I'm very willing to concede that, but because he cannot guarantee that there is going to be no impact on the channel, you're basically asking us to take a risk in case there is. And I don't think that, personally, I don't think that's a risk we should be expected to take. I would like to, I guess the next thing was that this is one of those things where there are unintended consequences, well, there can be unintended consequences from from messing with Mother Nature, if you like. And as an example, in 2006, our process was to pump our spoil hydraulically across the creek to an approved beach nourishment project on the other side. And we did that, and it was a partially successful dredge of the creek. That was in 2006. And after that, there was a fairly significant storm, and it washed all of that sand that had been pumped in front of where the nourishment project was, and it went, all came into the creek and ended up in front of the some of the houses further down. Now, and I think the last gentleman that supported the program was talking about that. That's less deep there now. Now, if we were to ask for permission to do that again, I think that the answer would be no, and the answer should be no. We've learned from that if you try and do a beach nourishment project at the mouth of the creek, the sand's probably not going to stay where you put it. It's going to end up somewhere else, and in this case, it ended up in the beachfront properties further down, further up. And I think there's a very strong probability that that 110 cubic yards of sand that you're going to deposit behind that breakwater. And I know the experts are saying it won't, but I think there's a strong possibility that it's going to end up under the Geisler Dock again. And I have my own picture of that. You've already seen that. That's Geisler's Dock with the sand that's under it. And we're putting 110 more cubic yards of sand just upstream of that and hoping that it doesn't go under his dock. So to address the risk-benefit side of this, the project will benefit only a handful of home lot owners living remotely from the Suskie Lock. This is not like it's beachfront property in front of their houses. This is remote. In fact, it's next to somebody else's lot. It's like asking to build a beach on somebody else's lot, basically, because this lot is very small. It's very narrow, and the sand's long gone. The homeowners on Tapps Creek and the general public will receive absolutely zero benefit from this structure. And even if the risk of increase of rate of sand infill into the channel is small, we're not suggesting it's a big risk, but we think it is a finite risk, the financial cost associated with that risk, which is increased dredging activity, will be borne exclusively by Tapps Creek Civic Association. We're a private organization, and we have, as been pointed out, dredged four times and had about a total cost of $200,000. From our members, there is not 1 cent of public money goes into this, and we don't think we should be asked to accept that risk. Margie went over the risk to adjacent homeowners of public access, so I won't do that again. I put this up because this is one of the photographs. It's out there. The southern shoal, what we call the southern shoal, is to the north. There's the Geisler Boathouse and the northeast corner. There's been a lot of discussion about that. The reason I put it up there is because it's been stated that the shoals are static, that they're not moving. And I'm sorry, but that's not true. The shoals are moving. This southern shoal is moving northward. Anyway, we'll get to that in a minute, if that's okay. This is what's left of Silent Sands Beach. There isn't much. That's high tide. It's actually not high tide. It's close to high tide. But there's really basically nothing left of this beach at high tide. At low tide, there is. That's the approximate breakwater location. This has been covered by, I didn't know what was going to be covered ahead of it. And that tree there is the one that's going to have to be removed if you want to get access from the trail to the the big tree. What I also think is somewhat misleading is that that's the spit of land that's sticking out into the creek. The old channel went all the way around very close to the northern shore, and that is Silent Sand Beach on that spit of land. It's not the beach that we that I just showed you on the previous sand. And we think that it would have been better in 1969 if the Corps of Engineers had dredged the existing channel and left it where it was, because that's where the channel wants to be, rather than blast it through the end of the creek, which now has cut off Silent Sand Beach. Silent Sand Beach was now completely cut off from the land, and in fact, since 1969, it's disappeared. The whole thing's disappeared. There's still, you can still see some remnants of the entrance to the creek. There's some sort of vestiges of it left, but we were presented in 1997 with the Corps of Engineers channel as it was. That was the channel, now the channel going in and out of the creek, and it was silting in. And if you look here, this slide shows it very clearly. It's narrowed in. It's narrowed in here, and that's because of the northern migration of the southern shoal. And also, not only has it narrowed in, but it was significantly shallow in here, and that was why Taps Creek Civic Association was formed, to try and keep the creek open for everybody. By 2013, you can see that the channel is now in good shape, but it's quite shallow. And the the last time we dredged was 2014. But this is the dredging history. We dredged it first in 1997, again in 2002, again in 2006, and then lastly in 2014. Now, in addition to the dredging, we have installed and maintained U.S. Coast Guard approved navigation marks for the length of the shallow part of the entrance. And although some charts still show the entrance to be too shallow for public access, in fact, you can navigate that channel now in any boat. It's 7 feet of mean water.
Sir, I understand the dredging history and everything. We need to please condense the remarks as to why you're in opposition. I know this gives a lot of background, but what is your concern as far as opposition to this project?
Okay.
Thank you.
What we observe is, this is as opposed to what's in the BIMS report, that the shoal is moving slowly northward, and we think it's from a combination of sand entrained in storm waves approaching from the northeast and current flows approaching from the south and rounding the point of the channel. That's where the sand is coming from, and we have moved the channel north 50 feet in 2002 between markers 3A and 4, and in 2006 between markers 5 and 6. VIM states that the channel position has not changed, and that's just not true. It has. This is the drawing you've seen before, and these are the markers. I just marked them in here. Marker 5 is the one that's in the middle of the southern shoal. Marker 3A is the one that's east of that. And in fact, marker 3A used to be marker 4. The channel was actually down here. And we've had to consistently move that channel north because of sand accretion into the channel from the south. And we think that anything you do here, I don't think you can say categorically, is not going to increase that effect. And in fact, VIMS doesn't say it will not. They just feel it's not going to be significant. Why? What is significant? I'll go through these. You've seen all this. But I'd like to address the conclusions and what our response to the VIMS letter, because I think it's important. The quote from VIMS is, the channel position has not changed, nor have the offshore shoals. Well, the channel has. It's moved at least 50 feet north in 2006 and 2014, and the southern shoal does move steadily to the north. And it's and the next thing they said was, the effect of the breakwater will most likely be to accrete sand on the bayward end until such time as it begins to bypass along the outside of the creek structure, where it will continue into the creek. And we agree with that, but we don't think that's a positive thing, that you're accumulating sand 50 feet further out into the channel, where it's closer to the channel. The impinging wave-back interaction with the rock structure will be attenuation along the rock face with minimal wave reflection. I have a bit of a trouble with that sentence, but I think what it's saying is that there will be wave reflection. Waves are going to be reflected from that breakwater. That's what breakwaters do. And those waves in northeast storms are carrying with them entrained sand, and when they hit that breakwater, they reflect it off the breakwater and then they go back out towards the channel with the sand. And it's carrying that sand towards the channel, and there's a likelihood some of it will end up in the channel. So the letter then says there's no obvious hydrodynamic process would cause the proposed breakwater to project sand northward into the creek channel. I think both of those things that I've just described are hydrodynamic processes that will tend to do that. And I think it's not right to ignore that and say that, well, the risk of that should be borne, it's okay for the risk to be borne by us, when we generate, when we have absolutely no benefit from the from what they're doing. The channel will continue to infill because of ongoing shoreline processes, and we do not feel the proposed structure will exacerbate these processes. We do not feel the proposed structure will exacerbate these processes. He's not saying the shore, the structure will not exacerbate these processes. He's saying that he doesn't feel they will. And he refused, when we talked to him, to guarantee that they won't.
I think in this situation, with the hydrodynamics the way they are in there, there can't be anything that is 100% certain. What he has given is his opinion based on 39 years of experience of what he believes likely to occur, given circumstances that he has likely seen in the past to make those judgments, I would presume.
Well, sure, I would presume too, but I'm not arguing with what Mr. Hardaway has said. All I'm saying is that there is no, it's likely not to, but there is a risk that it will.
There is a risk in that area, based on what I see, of many unknowns occurring.
Look, of course, but and we are prepared to deal with those. This is a process that's been going on and will continue, and we will continue to have to stretch this channel. What I'm saying is that there's a possibility this is going to increase the rate, not by much, very, very much, maybe, but that's a financial impact on us.
Yes, sir. I understand.
This is my final slide, we think that there is an increased risk, but we can't quantify it. The project proposes to deposit 110 cubic yards, and we've been assured that that's not going to go anywhere. I don't put much faith in that assurance, having seen what the weather does to the sand around the entrance to the creek. The project may benefit a few private landowners. There's no guarantee that sand's going to work and that we're going to end up with a bigger beach there, but there is no public benefit. But there is a rest of the creek entrance. We may have to dredge it more frequently. That's an increased cost for Dabbs Creek and a greater harm to the environment. And we now have a creek with a channel that is accessible to the larger boating community, and we've got boats now frequently come into the creek, which is a public benefit in my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Thank you for your presentation, sir. Who's next? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Could you state your name for the record, please?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Bill Broadus. Members of the Commission, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you on behalf of my client, Tom and Millie Geisler. They're the property owners that are immediately adjacent they're the property owners that are immediately adjacent to the Silent Sand Beach. I served in government for a number of years. I, as part of that, defended government action during that of many staff members. It is with great reluctance that I have to state that this report submitted by the staff is flawed. It is fatally flawed because it ignores the law and it ignores pertinent facts. You adopted guidelines to guide your deliberations. Subaqueous guidelines provide that the public trust doctrine protects subaqueous lands for the public benefit. No reference made to that in the staff report. Section 3, subparagraph A, provides that filling on state-owned subaqueous land for the purpose of reclaiming or creating highland property is generally not permitted. No reference made to that presumption against this permit. It continues, requires that special circumstances must exist to warrant such filling action. There's a similar provision for wetlands. Section 3, subparagraph G, provides that fill material may only be placed on submerged land for shoreline stabilization and or wetland enhancement, and the project can be shown to have positive aquatic resource benefits. There's no analysis whatsoever of special circumstances warrant overcoming the presumption against this project. There's no analysis whatsoever of positive aquatic resource benefits. The only benefit that is offered is reclaiming this beach for the benefit of the Siouxskies and perhaps others. That's a private benefit that certainly does not meet the requirements of the guidelines which you adopted. So as a matter of law, we submit that this must fail. Let me turn to the facts. First off, the subdivision is not Dungeons Thicket subdivision. It's Trails End subdivision. And that was platted in the 1950s. The developer retained the ownership of Silent Sand Beach, and he provided for each lot, which now include the Geisler's lots, that there would be an easement across those lots, I believe 20 feet in width, I'm not certain of that, to provide ingress and egress to the beach. So as Ms. Siouxski acknowledged, she does not own a road. Geisler's purchased the property in the 1984. Siouxskies have come to the area much more recently and acquired each parcel last year. The Geisler's, to protect the land that they owned, put a riprap, as you can see here, on their property. That has protected their property. It is not washed. When they initially came, the beach extended farther out, and it did have the effect of being an attractive nuisance to people who used it, other than those in Trails End subdivision. People would come on their property. They would sit on the Geisler's deck and use their property as their own beach. But that's not their primary concern. It is a concern, but it's not the primary concern. Their concern is the effect of sand washing over Silent Sand Beach and coming in and filling in the boathouse. Sorry, I'm not sophisticated enough to have presentation that goes on the screen, but here's some photographs that I would ask you to take a look at. In 2015, the nor'easter came in and filled in the boathouse covered slip area that the geeselers used. That slip was adequate to house a 20-foot boat. Now it is completely covered. As a consequence, the geeselers were forced, at a cost of approximately $10,000, to extend their dock out, I believe it was 32 feet. And it extends out now in this direction. BIM's report is important. It says that this proposed structure will accrete sand until it bypasses that structure and flows into Tabbs Creek. I would suggest to you that this structure, together with this structure that presently exists, will in effect create a sluice or a race, and it will exacerbate the flow of water down this area. It will cause sand to come around even more. And of course we know that under the proposal there's going to be even more sand there. Not only will sand be accreted, they're going to dump 110 cubic yards of sand. Some of that sand is going to come into the creek, just as Bim said, and it will fill in the geeseless dock that they just had to extend. Now, the only people that have the opportunity to use the beach are the owners of lots in this general area. The Suskies live in this area, running on this beach, and have ready access to the waters of Fleets Bay. There are interior lots that do not have beach access. And the Suskies own, not certain how many parcels, but they own a number of parcels in this area that are undeveloped. There's certainly no benefit that outweighs the public interest in maintaining Tabbs Creek Channel and outweighs the public or the private interest of the geeselers in using their property. If there's any way to overcome the presumption against this project that you have provided in your guidelines, it's not been stated. The private benefit of several lot owners who do not have beach access is not enough to require the geeselers to have to run the risk that far more sand will creep around their dock. It's certainly not enough to overcome the public interest of the Tabbs Creek Association. What is the benefit? The only evidence is to protect the parcel they bought. That parcel they bought last year, but it did not contain any beach at all to speak of. Except they're going to create an opportunity to sell lots. Please reject this. Follow your guidelines. There's no positive benefit to the aquatic resources.
Thank you, Mr. Broaddus. Any questions for Mr. Broaddus by members of the commission?
Seeing none, thank you. It's a pleasure to have you, an esteemed member of the bar, here before us today. Thank you for your public service. Who's next? Yes, sir. State your name for the record, please.
Yes, my name is Bill Glover. I'm a homeowner on Taps Creek.
Nice to have you here, sir.
Thank you. I contribute to the dredging fund, as everyone does every year. I have two questions. First is this normal? How many times has this commission approved an application to develop a beach fronting someone else's property? How many times has this commission approved the development of a beach that is multiple times wider than the lot to which it is supposed to be attached? This lot was submerged the day the applicant purchased it. In fact, is this a lot? Reference item A, or the first thing in that handout I just gave you. That's the tax map from Lancaster County for this lot. The assessed value of the lot is $500. This is waterfront property. No, this is below water property and has been for decades. Notice that the lot, number 35C1A1A, is on the channel side of Giesler's property marked 35C1A1. Reference item B in that package I just gave you, it's a picture. Look at all the pictures that you've seen today of this lot. Jay's pictures, the pictures that the applicant has. You have yet to see a picture of the lot. You've seen a bunch of pictures, and they all look like that picture that I just gave to you. I took it yesterday. It looks like water lapping up on the revetment that you would assume would be the lot, but it's not. It's water lapping up on the revetment that protects Giesler's property. And that's what this lot has been for a very long time. You will see a slight, narrow little beach at the lowest of tides. That's what we're talking about. This lot disappeared after 1969, when the Army Corps of Engineers decided to move the channel from where nature wanted it to be in the north, and they moved it some distance, a good distance, as you can see from the pictures that have been submitted to you. They moved it south. The channel and the point has wanted to move back to the north ever since, because that's where nature wants it to be. And we, the Taps Creek Civic Association, has been paying a couple $100,000 over the last 20 years fighting that northerly progression. VIMS has submitted a report to you, and yes, Mr. Hardaway has a lot of experience, and it's full of science, and it's full of a lot of historical information. But the thing that's interesting to me when I read the VIMS report is it's all based upon Google images on historical plats or, you know, aerial views. None of it is based upon the records that Jay has in his office. All you have to do is go in there and look at the applications that we've made to maintain this channel over the last 20 years. All you have to do is ask your staff for those records, and you'll find that this southern shoal is moving north, and we've had to move the channel north in response, about 50 feet and then another 40 feet. Is that right? So I ask that your staff advise you of that history, because VIMS has not included it in the report. This is not opinions, it's not guesses, it's fact. But back to the lot. I would like to ask each of you, because each of you have extensive experience in business and some of you in law with regard to this type of thing, do beach nourishment projects typically create beaches which are wider than the lots that they front. In this case, is this a beach nourishment project or a lot development project? As you can see from the picture, there isn't a lot. Perhaps, for a while at least, the applicant might create one until the next big storm once again washes it under Giesler's dock. Now facilitated by this channel that the last gentleman was referring to. They might successfully develop a lot, which will actually be a beach, not a lot, or will the beach be a lot? Is that really the intent of beach nourishment, to develop a lot? Are you, on this commission, encouraging people to buy long-lost lots from tax-starved governments, which is what happened here, so that they can build beaches? Because according to Al Gore, there's going to be a lot more lots like this that will be submerged, and a lot of people will be wanting to buy those lots from governments. My second question is this. Who are you here to protect? Are you protecting a property owner who wishes to develop a beach where nothing now exists just to enhance the value of properties which are distantly remote from the site? Or are you here to protect the welfare of the community at large? I ask you because you have a paper in front of you authorized by VIMS, and it is full of impressive historical information, but it inaccurately represents the challenges TCCA has contended with. And when I asked the author, Mr. Hardaway, if he could guarantee this lot development project would have no impact upon the channel, he replied, "No, I cannot guarantee anything." So he must believe there is a risk. And we have asked if the applicant will provide a surety bond protecting the interest of the public and the over 100 homeowners who have an interest in the open channel. Of course, I'm sure they are unable to find a surety underwriter to provide such a bond. Why? Because there is too great a risk when you're dealing with Mother Nature. And so the question has to be, who benefits from this project? And at what risk to the community at large? And is that balance of benefit and risk reasonable? I encourage you to consider our channel in the same way I know some of you consider your interests in your aquaculture industries when someone or something is threatening your livelihood, threatening your interest for their personal gain. I encourage you to reject this project because it simply is not in the best interest of the community at large. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next? Sir, state your name, please.
My name is Derwin Booker. I own approximately 3 acres in the subdivision, Trails End subdivision, which is in the Dungeon Thicket area.
Yes, sir.
The county, Virginia.
Good to have you here.
Thank you, sir. Sure. I have owned this property since 1973, and I have lived adjacent to this project since 2001. I have watched many storms come through here. I also want to state that since 2001, I've been on the board of the Northern Neck Soil and Water Conservation District. I'm very well aware of the advantages of a living shoreline. Let me say this. This is not a living shoreline. I know what a living shoreline is. This area has to be hardened. Mr. Hardaway would agree with that, I'm sure. And by the way, I don't disagree with Mr. Hardaway. I'm sure it will protect that beach. But this used to be a point, okay? I remember it as a point of land that a lot of people enjoyed. Over this period of time, since this beach has been gone, or this point has been gone, I've witnessed any number of people of who we don't know come on Mr. Geisler's pier, Mr. Geisler's porch, his deck. My wife and I have called him many times and said, do you know someone who owns a white van? No. I said, there's a white van over here in front of your property. Let me tell you something. You cannot control that. You cannot control who comes and goes.
No, you're okay? Correct.
There's no way you can control who comes and goes to that property. Okay? I'm there. I know.
All right.
Okay. So, I know what a living shoreline is. This is not a living shoreline. You get a northeaster in there, it'll tear that thing up. I'm pretty sure that Mr. Hardaway's drawing will protect that little piece of beach. Okay? I think you all will agree with that. But that's all it's going to protect. You know, if we want protection, what we need, we got an 80-foot channel, 50 feet wide. We need a sill on the north side of that channel and a sill on the south side of that channel to protect what you see right there. If we had a sill going around, it would probably stop that sand, keep us from having to dig that channel out, spend $200,000. Look, come on. Who wants to spend $200,000? You know, come on. Look. Money better spent. 2 80-foot sills, one north and one south.
In all due respect, sir, that's not before the commission at this time.
I understand it isn't, but this project is.
Yes, sir.
We need to protect what's there. That's all. I just want to say you can't control who comes to that point. There are actually two subdivisions in Dungeon Thicket. Bayfield Beach, Trails End. The only people that have access to that, people from Trails End. You can control who comes from Bayfield Beach.
Yes, sir.
Okay?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for any your question.
Thank you. Any questions?
I'd appreciate any questions.
Now, I just have one comment. The comment you made about the two sills.
Yes, sir.
You said that it would probably keep the sand from coming in. And we've heard a lot of probablys today, or might, or reasonable certainties and certainties.
I understand.
Okay.
Jay, where is it? You all have the picture?
Yep, that's a great picture, too.
So it shows. I just want to show where my property is on that picture, if you will. I'd like to have the picture back.
And we have to hold the picture for 30 days for appeal.
Jay knows the property very well.
This is Mr. Booker's house.
If you will, right there. And I'm right on the cove. Right across the cove is the question property.
Where's that picture again? I want to see it. All right, sir.
The access, as you can see, will run. Jason,
thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you all for the time.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Who's next? Okay, the applicant has 5 minutes to rebut. Greg, Mr. Poblinski, will you be providing rebuttal? Go ahead. That's all right, sir. Yes, sir. You are under oath. Please proceed.
The reason we're here today is the Suskies are wishing to exercise their right to protect their property. It's not an amenity. They have a sand beach that varies anywhere from 10 to 30 feet wide, extends 300 linear feet. Although a small strip of sand is still is property that they wish to preserve and enhance by adding sand, creating 1,600 square feet of vegetative wetland, converting what's already sand, mostly sand, and creating wetlands and dune. So that's why we're here today, simply to protect their property and exercise their rights to protect their property, just as all the adjacent property owners have exercised their rights to protect their waterfront. You have a growing field here on the bay side, bulkheads, revetments. You have a revetment that was installed on this beach property in question, you know, without the prior owner's permission to do so. You have groins on the back shore and also a groin back in the Taps Creek. All were approved and permitted. So they have all exercised their rights to protect their waterfront property.
Which groin are you saying, or revetment, or any improvements were placed onto their, that's, the Suskies did not put that in?
No, sir. They were, that was put in by the Geislers back in 1989 and 90, when the prior owner of the property was, I think, Janet Kosha. The survey plat and the drawings of record do show that revetment that was placed on their property.
How about the other side that I'm looking at from this picture that's been provided to me? Got them on both sides. Whose is this over here? For the record, it would be to the right-hand side of the picture as we look at it there. Whose is that? Is that the Suskies?
That's the Suskies back shore, yeah.
Okay.
That was called there.
But they installed that?
No, the Geislers, the adjacent property owner.
Installed both? On the point.
I better clearly show you on the drawings. So this section line here, go extending, the property line is below that. So this revetment was installed by the owners of this parcel and this parcel to protect their upland property. But that riprap was placed on the Suskies property when it was owned by a prior owner back in the late 1980s.
Or by a prior owner.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now I understand. Thank you. Good. Did it? Okay. Any questions of the applicants? Yes, Mr. Ballard.
If I'm reading, I'm looking at figure 2-3, and it looks like your drawing is stating that the section beyond channelward of mean low water that this project would impact is anywhere from 18 feet to 26 feet. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's correct. That's the maximum channelward encroachment from mean low water.
Okay.
Further questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Matters before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Tankard, yes, sir.
Could we have the slide that was up here before this one that showed the photograph, the aerial photograph of the area?
Got it.
The one that was that had the proposed breakwater added to it?
No,
just
yeah. Well, yes, that would be fine. That worked well. It was the one that you had before this.
That's easiest.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, sir.
So thus, you know, growing up on the water, being around for a while, you know, I think I agree with Mr. Woodward's assessment that migration of sand is from south to north, and it looks like the groins have kind of stopped that, and thus you don't really have a point anymore. The damage in many regards has been done, but I think the proof here is that south to north is the migration of sand, and the breakwater that the Suskies, or the offshore breakwater that they propose, will continue to enhance the south to north capture of sand. So I'm not at all convinced that there's any danger of filling in the channel. If you just look here at this slide, I can't imagine that there would be any filling of the channel. So that's my two cents to start the discussion. I appreciate the testimony that we've heard today, and I can appreciate wanting to having a channel that's open so that one can move around on the water. I mean, that's a priority when you have a boat and you're on the water. So,
ma'am, we don't.
I certainly understand that, but it seems to me that we see these man-made structures that have captured a lot of sand already. And I don't see why another structure wouldn't do the same.
Thank you, Mr. Tankard. Dr. Neal?
I have a legal question of counsel.
Yep. Proceed.
We authorize groins and breakwaters and jetties all the time. So you have a comment on the attorney's comment that we don't have, we're exceeding our authority to do this?
He referenced the subaqueous guidelines. As this commission knows, guidelines are just that. Courts have ruled on that many times, that the commission is not bound by guidelines. They do not have the force of law. In terms of the public trust doctrine, that's Illinois Central Railroad case from the Supreme Court of the United States. It specifically allows filling or essentially alienating the Commonwealth or the state's ownership of the bottom if the public interest would not be significantly impacted. The code in terms of 28.2-1205 specifically says that you will consider the public and private benefits of the proposed project. So that indicates it's more a weighing of how much the public interest will be harmed in consideration of whatever private benefits might exist. I do not believe you would exceed your authority by approving this. I think it's within your discretion to consider the factors and make a decision.
Thank you.
Further questions? Mr. Ballard?
Just discussion. I want to concur with Mr. Tankard's sentiments. I'm not too concerned about the channel effects. What I'm weighing is the effect on the homeowner's property that's already filled in with sand. And it's conflicting in that VIMS is telling us that they think the structure will ease that, but yet at the same time, the property owner isn't convinced of that and is objecting to this permit. I agree that the channel issues are out of my mind, but I do wonder about the effect on that boathouse and property of that other property owner, and how do we weigh the guidance of VIMS versus the property owner's desires. So just discussion.
Reply to that discussion.
Had Mr. Zedrin first, then Dr. Neal.
I heard a lot of things. This is another tough one for us. But I'm not so sure that this is all about filling that land in. I mean, what I hear a lot of is, well, you know, when that was a beach, there was a lot of people there that were abusing it and doing those type of things.
That's totally out of our purview.
And that's exactly my point. It is that that's beyond, it may be a reality, but that's beyond what we have jurisdiction to do. And it, from my perspective, and I think what backs it kind of up is the guy that owns the house filled with sand there, you know, he put that rock around there to protect his land. And that's all these people are trying to do. That's as man-made as this particular project here. So, you know, if one can do it, so can the other. And really, listening to our people, is probably going to enhance that and keep the sand from coming in there. So I think it's a hard one again, but I think our jurisdiction just deals with that land. And I think I know I'm in support of it.
Dr. Neal?
First of all, I agree with what John just said. But in response to Chad's discussion, how can it get worse? I mean, that's my, you know, I just don't see how this can make it worse. And our state experts say it may make it better. I mean, the daggone boathouse is already full of sand. I mean, you know, how much more full can it get?
Mr. Minor? Anybody else have further discussion? Mr. Minor?
Yes. Just want to make a motion to approve staff recommendation.
There's a motion by Mr. Minor to approve staff recommendations. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Zedrin. Further discussion? You know, my only comment is that it is a tough decision, but at the same time, my decision is guided pursuant to Section 28.2.1205, which mandates that we take the advice of the Virginia Institute of Marine Science, who are our scientific advisors. Mr. Hardaway was up here with 39-plus years of experience indicating to us, the panel, that he believed that this would not in any way, and it's also in the report, would not exacerbate the filling of the channel or any other problems. So all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. We will be on break for lunch until around 10 to 1.